Almost Live from Nigel, it's time for this week's Armour Newspapers podcast.
Hello, I'm Andy Dalrymple, and welcome to this week's Armour Newspapers podcast, Almost Live from Nigel. This week, the prom, A-levels, and football. To try and give you a taste of this, and some of the other news that has been hitting the headlines in our print titles, and of course online at imtoday.co.im, I'm joined by Newshound Sam Turton.
Hello.
And Distribution's very own Katie Kitchener.
Hi.
What was that tone, Sam? That was slightly sinister.
I was trying not to giggle after your football!
Football! Goal!
Kick it in the net, Katie.
It's that time of year again. Is everyone excited? We're talking about the Manx football season, of course. Not Notts Forest.
No.
Has your dad got over the whole disappointing thing about needing a point to get into the playoffs and messing it up?
Spectacular.
He very much, whenever they do anything horrific like that, he'll just go, I much prefer cricket these days, Kay. I'm well into the cricket now.
Did you see that Notts Forest's new away kit for next season has been released? And it's blue, but with sort of wavy lines on it. And I saw a tweet from former Sunderland Aberdeen goalkeeper David Preece, who is working as a coach in Sweden at the moment. He was saying that it reminded him of a pressure map on a weather map. So he said, there's probably a chance of rain in the next few days. So, yes, one to have a look out.
Maybe they're being sponsored by the shipping forecast.
Yeah, or the Met Office.
Yeah.
There you know. Good week, Sam?
I think so, yeah. It's been all right. It's been a bit hot, hasn't it?
You're looking a bit, you're looking a bit sun-kissed.
Yeah. Well, you know, it comes from...
You're very bronzed.
Yeah, and you've got two fine Manx tans on your arm there.
What's worse is you see as it just very quickly goes pale. I've got a bite there as well.
Have you been cruising around with your in the mini with your hand out or arm out?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, cruising. Yeah.
What style of sunglasses do you sort of wear?
I don't wear sunglasses.
Oh, you should.
No,
it's important to protect your eyes.
No, see, there's a reason behind that. First of all, I just look better squinting. And second of all, I just think there's a very fine line when it comes to sunglasses between looking like a cool and looking like a fool.
See, I think you'd be a man that suited an aviator.
I was just thinking an aviator for Sam.
I don't know. I'm not a fashion icon.
Last time you wore a pair of sunglasses?
I bought a pound pair. It was a pound a pair to avoid the glare.
God.
I got them, I think it was in Whitby, I got them, they were like plastic pair, and then I was on a boat trip that went out, and I was looking over them, and they fell off.
So, what do you think it was because they were a quid they fell off?
No, I think I've just got a very big head, and they weren't really fitting properly.
Okay. Even
when you were in Barbados, you didn't wear sunglasses?
No.
Squinting his way around Barbados.
No, I spent a lot of time in cold bars with other Englishmen who burnt themselves on the first day as well.
Okay.
Casey, do you have a preferred sunglasses style?
I like a classic, like Ray-Ban Wayfarer.
They're very cool, aren't they?
Yeah, that's my go-to style.
Yeah.
Except, of course, when you get like the knockoff versions at markets, they're always called like Roy Bonds or Ray Berries.
Get your Roy Croppers out.
Yeah.
Roy Bonds sounds like a darts player from the 70s.
Roy Bond, game on!
Yeah. Right, we digress as always. Let's delve in some news for you people, good people who are listening. All right, we'll kick off with a story that's rumbled on and on and on and on and is likely to rumble on a bit further yet. And that is, of course, the Douglas Promenade redevelopment scheme. We've had a bit of an update this week, haven't we, Sam? We've sent out Duncan Fowkes, our F for Freddy, our business editor, to interview Tim Baker, who is now Minister of Infrastructure, to get a bit of an update on how the scheme is developing, whether they're going to meet this April 2021 deadline they've set themselves, and sort of basically ask him, has it been a bit of a ball drop all over the place, hasn't it? Really?
Yeah, it's an interesting interview, actually, because... Mr. Baker, I think it's the first big interview we've definitely done with him since he went on to infrastructure, because of course he got appointed just as during lockdown, as it were. So he's basically said that they're working to this date, the 31st of March, to get it all finished for April 1st, which they've admitted is a challenging deadline and is maybe a bit sort of hopeful. But of course, they're not actually finishing the prom. We need to keep restating this. They are not finishing it. They're doing it to a point of near finishing it, and then they're going to come back later and do a bit more finishing by, hopefully next winter. But so this is at the minute where he's done this interview with Duncan, and he said that perhaps they weren't clear enough about how many problems there were going to be.
Mm.
So I think there was a thing he said about, I would have been very clear with people this is going to be a painful project.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen it this week, there's a fair number of businesses on the prom have been sharing, I think it was one of the Italian restaurants did it first, was like the little blackboard you get outside restaurants.
Yeah.
They put the thing up saying, if you want to know what it's like to run a business on the prom, it's like being the band during the Titanic, or words like that, and they said, we're the band. And there's loads of businesses have shared it around, because it has been very hard for businesses, and then they've had COVID on top of that. Yeah. And
yeah,
I mean, you know, I always use the example, and it's a stupid example, but it sort of shows it, that William Hill cut their opening hours, and it's always one of the things, if a bookies is not making money, there's a problem.
Yeah.
And that's the prime example of it, really. So they're pushing for this, because the basic aim is that, you know, aside from our friends from Guernsey, we're not exactly busy with tourists this year, so they're pushing to get it all done this summer. Mm-hmm. And get it all finished by April. Will they do it? I wouldn't put a mortgage on it. But,
I love that some of the standout quotes, and I think it's what we used in the headline, was Mr. Baker described it as almost like heart surgery, what's been going on at the prom. Mm. And, you know, Katie's just scoffed there, but it's quite, we're dealing with years and years of Victorian engineering, aren't we, and all sorts of different issues, and the goalposts also keep seemingly getting moved about what's required and what's needed and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing was originally, with all this, it is a problem, because nobody really knows what's buried under the prom. Until they went down and looked, nobody really knew it was down there. Because a lot of the work had been done, you know, the original Victorians, they never built things compacted and all this, but I always say this thing for me always, when I look into the Victorians, would have hated us, because they would have looked at it and gone, why is that still there?
Mm.
So I always think that there is an element of, you know, at some point there should have been more work done on this, but until now they've never done it. So you're all dealing with the Victorian era stuff that's down there. You're also dealing with pipes that were put in there, you know.
The Irish scheme. Yeah.
But the Irish scheme was the last time anyone did any major work down there, which always amazed me that they didn't really check what was down there then. Mm. It seems a bit weird that they didn't use that as an opportunity to do the prom.
Yeah.
But they didn't. So, you know.
But he has said this time, key buzz phrase, future-proofing.
Yeah, future-proofing, because there's a running sort of joke that I know amongst certain people in utilities about who's going to be the first ones to dig it up. And it's sort of, there's a three-way tie between the DOI, Manx Gas, and the MEA about who's going to be the first one to go down and do something, because that's always the feeling of it. Interestingly enough, it could end up being the railway system, because, of course, we've got these tram lines that have been laid throughout it, which, as any... I'm sure, as everybody knows, they're very different tracks to what we used on the previous system, because they've put down actual rail tracks as opposed to the horse tram tracks that we used to have, which could take a light rail system. So the whole thing is here is that they could link up to the MER at some point. So, you know, the whole thing is a bit...
Well, I found that a really interesting point in Duncan's interview was that they were saying that, yeah, we haven't ruled that out. You know, if congestion gets to a point where... You know, it was obviously being exaggerated at the moment because the prom is shut. But if that becomes the norm, we're not ruling out that the prom could suddenly be used for some sort of transport system.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing here comes that, so say you've got, at the minute, you know, you've got the MER that runs up and down the coast, and it's a Victorian line, Victorian infrastructure. And I always remember there was a joke about this when they did one of the trams up, they tightened everything up on it, and it created problems. Because the trams have to be certain looseness to get around some of the bends on it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you look at it, I don't know what modern equipment you could run on there. So I always look and go, you know, I can see why they perhaps want to link up to the MER, but I always look and go, can you definitely do it? You know, and also we've got the thing of all along the line, they have these big poles of tram cables running on them. We don't really know how that would work with the road. So I think it's a typical another thing of the prompt where... This is Duncan's done a really good interview, which has left us with more questions than answers.
Yeah.
Because as with everything with the prom, every answer is a question.
Yeah. Well, as you say, it's going to rumble on and on, but I really do urge you to read Duncan's interview, which was on page 3 of this week's Manx Independent, as Katie will tell you where you can get that online now.
Yep, iomtoday.co.im. Click digital editions.
Of course, it's still in the shops as we speak. Right, the other big story this week has been about A-level SAM. Now, again, we say this, the prom story ran on and on, but this A-level story this week, obviously today, Thursday was A-level results day. But this has been since the start of the week. There's been some exam boards released their results early. Then there's been shock at the actual what the results were. And then this now seems to be the schools are going to come together and actually appeal some of the results because they've been downgraded that much.
Yeah, I think the original warning for this came from Scotland, really, because their results came out first.
The highers.
And, yeah, the highers, which turned out to be a lot lower than the people thought. there was no Highlands in Scotland, that much. I think the warning signs were there that this was going to go wrong, because, interestingly enough, actually, they've said Cambridge International, and we haven't really covered much on it, but there was a thing about when this moved to it. I know former Ramsey Grammar teacher David Tracy said on Twitter about this that this is a system that teachers never wanted. So it is quite interesting how it seems to be focused on certain exam boards where these problems have been found, but they are the ones that are used the most. So it's come around to here where we've got, you know, the exam results were out Thursday and a lot of them being downgraded. I think it was Ramsey Grammar said that 90% of one of their subjects has been downgraded. And they're going to be looking at appealing that. And the government have said they're going to help all the schools appeal.
Yeah.
So whether there's something they'll be paying for it or whether they'll be lobbying pressure onto the UK government. But of course, the Education Minister, the Education Secretary on the UK, Gavin Williamson, has sort of said that there's no need to apologise and all that sort of stuff. He's made some very bizarre comments about this whole thing. But the government here are going to assist the schools in doing this and trying to appeal it. Because it's sort of one of them, you know, exam results day, it's a horrible day at the best of times, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, because we've got kids in the moment that are in even more of a limbo, aren't they? Because obviously they've been offered places on condition of them getting certain results. You'll have found that probably they maybe have got three of those four results. Now, most of the times that probably would have secured you a place, but there might be for the top end, the more popular courses or the more exclusive courses, that might not be enough. And then suddenly you might find 2 or 3 weeks down the line that their result actually has been upgraded to what was needed. So
yeah,
they're going to still be in limbo for a couple of weeks yet, aren't they, whether they're going to?
Yeah, and we also don't know what's happening in universities. I know some universities said they won't be accepting students at the start of the year. Others have said they will. It's a bit, you know, there's a lot. And of course, then you've got the government problem of, it was announced this week, Britain's in a recession, which means our own economy is in a different sort of shape, but it will be affected by that. So you start to look and say, the government don't want a load of students hanging around if they could get them to university, because it's not going to help with the employment stuff. So there's a lot of things flying around on this, and it's very easy to look at the A-level results by isolation, but there's a lot going on around it. So, yeah, it's a bit weird. But I know a lot of the universities have also said that they are going to be accepting people of lower grades,
yeah,
because they've accepted that this is badly wrong. Mm. So you have got the thing where the universities and the schools seem to be sorting out amongst themselves, or at least looking to do that, and the education boards, so the education exam boards and all that sat in the middle going, oh, well, we did what was right, and we did this system, and the UK government are backing them up. So it is quite an interesting sort of situation, and a pretty bad one for a lot of people.
I saw Dave Neil, our photographer, turned star feature writer, has been covering that for us this week. And he did a great piece in the Indy, it was on the front page of the Indy. Again, as I say, please do look out for that in the shops. But also, he's done a piece in the Courier, which will be dropping through your letterbox any point over the next couple of days. And that was sort of a reaction. He went to Ramsey Grammar this morning, and they were almost in shock at how downgraded their results would be. There was a telling quote from Deputy Head William Wood. He said it was one of his worst weeks in his teaching career, because he's just said all that hard work that the students and the teachers have put in was seemingly for nothing, because they've been marked down that much. And what I have to say, as you say, the government have been, Dr. Allenson, the current education minister over here, said he's been quite strong as well, saying it was a kick in the teeth for local students.
Yeah, I think this is sort of like a rare example of a case where people are furious, teachers are furious, the department's furious, and the students and parents are all furious, and everyone's going, oh, at least we have somebody to be angry at. Yeah. So sort of there's a very conjoined sort of thing about all this.
So, but again, this is going to rumble on and on, isn't it? I think for at least another few weeks anyway. I have to say, did you see the stats that they reckon 20% of A-level students are now said that they're going to stay here and go into gainful employment if they can? But apparently that's in line with what it usually is. I thought it would be quite
low. I was about to ask how many usually stay here anyway. Yeah.
Interestingly enough, the number of students going to university has been falling. And the amount spent on it has dropped by, oh, I think it's about £2 or 3 million. It's dropped by since 2013.
Right.
In terms of how much we're spending out on students going. So when you get figures on that, actually, about how many are going each year. But it does seem to be that there are less students going. Of course, though, you sort of look at it, a lot of students went when I went to university because we were 2013. So we were still in that sort of thing of the 2008-2009 economic crash was still sort of on the aftershock of that. So there was a lot of cases where people on our age and sort of around our age went to university because there wasn't the jobs there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sort of a way out sort of thing of it. I'd be intrigued what happens next year more than this year, perhaps, because
people have had their plans in place usually since back end of last year, don't they?
And with the economy in the UK the way it's gone, and we'll have to see what happens here, of course, because you look at some of the big chains in the UK that say they're going to be dropping jobs, that can impact on here as well, and the banking sector will be having another issue. So, you know, it's good they're saying that they want to go into employment. I have my concerns about what jobs are going to be there in terms of this, and, you know, what state the economy is going to be in 3 or 4 months' time. But then again, they may not be able to go to university anyway, depending on what happens with the COVID-19. So it's sort of like a perfect storm, isn't it, really?
Yeah. If to drop you two into this situation right now, what would you do? Would you defer for a year if you could? And then
yeah, I would. I think, anyway, when I went to university, one of the main incentives to go was just to get away from home, to get off the island, to go live kind of semi-independently because you're in that like university cushion. And it was more about the experience, and that's something they're going to be missing out on at least for a few months when they're on online classes. And it's just that thing of making it harder to make friends there. And
there's also the looming in the background, so there's the threat of a second wave.
And then you'd be stuck in the UK. Would you get home? But I'd say I'd defer, but I don't know what I would do here. Like Sam said, will there be jobs there
casual
to go
jobs
into?
Yeah.
And it's not like you can go travelling and have like a year off that way, because where are you going to travel to?
Kaufman.
It's lovely this time
Guernsey.
Of year.
Guernsey. Just Sam? Constant Guernsey.
I think I probably have to agree with Katie, yeah. A weird thing sort of struck me now, actually. I was talking with somebody about whether campus universities might be a better bet.
Mm.
So you might say Lancaster, if they say tested everybody on the way in.
Mm.
And then, I don't know if it's sort of one of them then.
Create a massive bubble.
Essentially, yeah, create a campus bubble.
Yeah.
I think it could possibly work maybe in places like, also like, you know, Oxford is a little bit more sort of in the town again, so I don't know whether it would work there. But I think city universities are going to struggle. Like, so I went to Nottingham and Trent, and it's right in the heart of the city.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of like, you know, you look at that, you couldn't do anything there because, you know, the nightclubs and all this that everyone went in were in the city centre. They, you know, they were round the corner, but they were still there. And that's a big part of that student life, you know. And I know Wetherspoons has reopened, they're run by the Maverick that is.
Yeah.
You know, so I think, yeah, the whole experience would be different. And also, you know, there's sort of lectures. You wouldn't be able to fit, I mean, you know, you'd have lectures of 200-300 people in them easily.
Yeah.
You wouldn't fit that in, you know, you couldn't get them people in there. You'd have like 100 at the most.
I think also, we're probably looking at this from a Manx point of view. So you'd have, a bubble would work for us.
Yeah.
Because you'd be like, okay, we can leave at this point and that. But you've got to remember, when I was at university, I'm sure the same with you, there's a lot of people that went home at weekends or even commuted in and out in the day, especially. So they're not going to be, oh God, well, probably open to being tested every day, or either that or they have to stay on campus when actually that's a big cost. You could, you know, if you're paying your tuition fees as well. You've got to pay accommodation on top of that.
I went to Leeds and there was a lot of people who just lived with their families in other towns in Yorkshire, and Leeds is obviously on a direct train line for everyone to get to.
Yeah, same with Nottingham, because Nottingham was quite a big base for East Midlands trains, so it was like everything went in and out of there. So it was, you had links to the north of England and to London, you were 2 hours away at the most, so a lot of people did come in. So, yeah, I think, yeah, you're right, because really we went. When we went to uni, you didn't come back for 10 or 12 weeks.
No.
You know, I went in September, come back in December. Went in January, come back in April. Yeah. And it was the only time I was here, but sort of wasn't term time, was TT. So that was like it, but otherwise you were there. So, yeah, I suppose it's very different for us, and we do look at it in our own sense. But I'd be interested, actually, because it might be worth chasing up with Guernsey, because they have obviously very similar situation as and Jersey. What their students are doing and how they're reacting to it, because they've obviously got a very similar sort of response that we have, but they've also got that difference of not being, you know, they're an island sort of thing where students go to university and they go overseas sort of thing. So it might be worth chasing them, actually.
Yeah, and as I say, that's probably going to be follow-up, more coverage in the Examiner on next week's papers, anyway. The student reaction, as it were, because it will still continue to pop. I know we'll have a Vox Pop. Dave spoke to a few students that are university-bound or not university-bound to get their gaze, their reaction, probably just as we've done then, and I think they'll probably be equally split. Although there's still people who seem, right, I'm going to university, you know, it's my time, so...
There's that thing, isn't it? If you don't go and you get settled into a job...
Will you ever go?
Yeah. It, you know, it's the same... It's that thing, isn't it?
It's hard as well when you first start earning money to then want to not be earning that again for a while.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you wouldn't, would you? You know, if you go into a job and you're earning, say, I don't know, to start 20 grand something as an average salary, then you're going off into... Are you really going to trade that in for beans on toast in the line of duty box set? I'm sure that's what the kids are all doing, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Watching
Flea Monkey or whatever it's called.
Right, this week's sports story involves the start of the Manx football season. And it's a momentous weekend for Manx football all around, actually, because the locals leagues are due to start on Saturday at 2:30 in the all four senior men's leagues. And, of course, FC Isle of Man makes its long-anticipated debut on Saturday night when they play Guernsey on the bowl at 6:30 kickoff. I believe tickets are selling well for that one. All of this is sort of, how should I put this, previewed in this week's Manx Independent and the 8-page annual supplement 451, which Disco Dave Norton has been slaving away with on it for the last couple of weeks. Also, I should point you in the direction of the second Manx football podcast of the season. I know you're probably thinking, well, we haven't, there's not been a ball kicked in anger, but we did a FC Isle of Man special a couple of weeks ago, and we've got the one, the only, Paul Hatton in for to look at our pre-season predictions, so that'll be on all good and even some bad podcast platforms in the next day or so. So please do have a listen out for that. Sam, of course, you'll be back kicking a ball in anger on Saturday, will you? Governor's Athletics Combi.
Yeah, we're...
The cat is back.
The cat is back indeed. We're down to our new home pitch.
Yes. You've gone left the Bema Bow.
We've left the Bema Bow. It was a sad and emotional departure that was brought about because we can't afford the government fees. And...
So you're now playing at Colby.
That's going to have to come out. Yes, we've moved to Colby. We've left the Bema Bow. We're heading down south to
the Station Fields.
Yeah, Station Fields. I'll be right at home. There's a steam train just there for me to go and watch. I could be the station cat. that'd be awesome.
Squad been named for Saturday yet? You?
No, we got trained. So we're actually training on the pitch tonight.
All right.
Because we have. Besides, so the Combi, we've played down there, but the first team we've never played down there.
Right, okay.
Because they've always, because we've always played Colby, we've always played on their pitch.
Yeah.
But we're using the pitch at the bottom of the Astro.
Right.
So we've been on to Dickie and we're training down there tonight. And yeah, that'll be interesting. And then we're playing on, because we got that on Saturday, and then of course
the midweek games next week.
I think we've got Pulley on midweek. So they've got, yeah, it's weird now for us because we've been Douglas and Uncombe based. We're suddenly there going, I hate Maloo. we've suddenly got less problems of Onken and D&D than all this. We've still got problems with gyms, but that's
Colby be a big game now, of course. Well, yeah, the tenants versus the landlords.
Yeah, Station Derby. We're going to have to come up with a good name. We'll come up with a good name for the Derby.
Okay. Yeah, we'll workshop that one. But yeah, so that's all kicking off on Saturday. There'll be reports on all the games, including the FC Isle of Man's match with Guernsey in next week's Examiner, which is on sale on Tuesday morning.
You're listening to the Isle of Man Newspapers podcast, almost live from Nigel.
Right, Sam, This Week in History takes us back to 1953 and the front page of the Isle of Man Examiner of Friday, August 14th. It's another very busy front page, as was the style of the time. What's taking your fancy this week?
Well, when I showed it to Katie, gave the front page, too much lamb.
That is a headline.
That is a hell of a headline.
There's no such thing as too much lamb.
I agree. They're cute and delicious.
The double win there.
And you get a nice jumper.
Yeah. This is a great intro to the story. Boarding housekeepers and butchers who asked for more Manx lamb for the visitors in the early part of the season now complain that they are getting too much of it.
Just be careful what you wish for.
Demand this week is for more beef in order that meat served to the visitors may be varied.
What a life to be like sick because all you can get is lamb.
That's it. I know we talk about first world problems in the modern age, but that is a first world problem.
That is a first world problem.
I'm stuck with all this lamb.
Yeah.
Save me.
The butcher complained that the number of beef cattle passed through the marts this week as 54% less than the previous week. This is just absolutely outrageous, isn't it? A butcher spokesman told an Examiner reporter that they were having a great difficulty in supplying the boarding houses with a varied diet of meat. Well, there you go. What's your favourite meat, Sam?
Lamb.
Lamb.
Do you know what?
Lamb. You would have loved that day.
Lamb and duck.
Together?
No, but they're the two best. Chicken and beef are good, but lamb and duck are... Ooh.
Yeah, I'm going to go lamb as well. I think lamb is fantastic.
I'm a chicken man. I love a chicken.
So I do love a chicken, but I love the smell of lamb when it's being cooked. It's got its own... It's the only meat I'd say has its definitive own sort of smell and everything to it. All the others are just sort of like, yeah, but lamb has a really powerful smell.
Apart from the lamb, Sam, what caught you from... Your eye on the front page this week?
Well, we had the latest beauty contest being held at the Villa Marina.
Yes.
In another fantastic example of the times, ever so slightly, where they lined up the three lovely ladies who had all... two Max girls come second and third that week, actually.
Yeah, because it used to be...
Well, it was always, like, Scouse girls winning and stuff, wasn't it? So,
I have to say, the editors of the time always tended to show the pictures from the bathing suit round.
Yeah, they did, didn't they? They did somewhat have a habit of doing this.
Although this was a bathing beauty. I remember, I think last week, the week before, we had another beauty contest on the front, and that was the bathing suit round had been specifically chosen.
Yeah, so I think there's a bit of a traction going on here.
Are they still a thing? Are they called something else now?
Well, Miss World still exists.
They did Miss Isle of Man last year, wasn't it?
Oh, it was a couple of years ago.
Because they did it they changed the whole scheme, but so it was actually about like women and society and all that.
Yeah, but there wasn't a swimsuit round or anything.
No,
I don't think so.
No, that would be pretty horrific.
A bit far these days.
Yeah.
I think my favourite thing on the front page, to be honest, though, well, there's a couple of things. There's the Mork Book Prosecutions, which is two charges of lending indecent books. Were made against Boots Cash Chemists, right? And the books were The Philanderer by Stanley Kaufman and Julia. They were obtained by Boots Library and by Constable Alan Killip.
So it was an undercover sting.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So what I love is that he examined the books on the shelves and chose two. Afterwards, he went to the manager of the shop and told him he had reason to believe the books were obscene and would be reported. After reading out passages in each of the two books, the case was adjourned for 3 weeks.
That's amazing. That's one of the best stories.
Really. I really want to know what was in these books, which is so bad. If anyone's read The Philanderer or Julia, and would like to get in touch,
please do on our Instagram or Twitter at IOM News Podcast. Sam, what was your other story you said?
It was girl rescued by Scotsman, and it's just because of the thing underneath it of call for help gallantly answered, and it was crowds of holidaymakers on Douglas Shore on Wednesday afternoon were spectators of a gallant rescue of a girl from drowning.
So last week we had the dog that nearly drowned.
Yeah. And then we've had a lot of very near drownings in the recent times.
Yeah, she was, so she was 20. Pearl Elizabeth Howe, again, if anyone knows Pearl, get in touch.
She was only staying at Empire Terrace.
Yeah, but you never know. We're going global. So she was staying at Empire Terrace and she was bathing in the sea opposite Mona Drive and got out of the depth. A strong ebb tide and heavy rollers near the shore, they pulled her out and she got into difficulties and called for help, where Mr. John McCant, who was 55 and who was a visitor staying at 9 Empire Terrace, went to her assistance and managed to support her in the water until help arrived. So they both he ran out and sort of helped her up.
Yeah.
And then help arrived and they were both taken to Nobles and treated for exhaustion and shock.
Both the people involved there had their full addresses printed.
Yeah, where they were staying, both.
No, and they were actually where they were from. One was from Chesterfield, and obviously Mr. Cant was from Mr. McCant.
Oh God, yeah,
was from Glasgow.
So if anyone knows Miss Howe of 10 Sycamore Lane, Hollingwood, Chesterfield,
yeah, please do get in touch. Katie, what caught your eye on the front page of This Week in History in 1953?
I was saying to Sam before, there's a photo at the bottom of a group of scouts on their way to Luxembourg, but because of the print, I couldn't actually see they were scouts. And I was like, oh, the lads are off to Luxembourg. Because it does look like a boys' weekend. Like, lads.
Yeah,
it's more dib, dib, dib than lads.
There was the adverts, obviously, Hotel Sefton, top left as always. Lindsay's Quine Corner, bargains for men, sales of men's sports coats and trousers. What else have we got, Katie? Got
children's holiday wear. This is the first time I think we've seen holiday wear specifically for children.
Mm.
It's an extensive range of kiddies washing frocks.
Now, the bottom right has got an advert for Lions, which we have featured before, but not this this actual advert, which looks to me a bit Handmaid's Tale, that coat.
Yeah, the look is quite...
Our fabulous new fabric Persian cord. It's very big.
It is.
And for August...
Even with the hat, like bonnet-type hat she's wearing is not...
It's a bit...
It's not helping the look.
Oh, what was it? Prime Suspect.
It also looks a bit like the coat you'd use. Do you remember when you see kids...
I think it looks like a flasher's mat.
It does look a bit like a flasher's mat. Or when kids, like, you know, in comedies and stuff, go climb on each other's shoulders to pretend they're an adult.
Yes. Yeah.
This Week in History, Katie, we go down the avenue of Hall Caine. It follows on nicely from last week's...
Vampires.
Yes. Well, alleged vampire, Matthew Horsall.
Yeah, because, well, originally I was like, let's look into Manx werewolves, but I didn't go down that route. So instead, I was very embarrassed to admit I didn't actually know who Hall Caine was. Heard the name, didn't really know much about the man. Still don't know that much about him because there's so much information about him. But anyway, Sir Thomas Henry Hall Caine, to give his full name, was basically a writer, but he dabbled in other things as well. He's not actually Manx, but he has a big connection with the island. So he was born in Runcorn and was raised in Liverpool. He did have family in Balaff and Macald, and his uncle's headstone is still in Macald in the churchyard there. His actual like connection to the Isle of Man became one of the things that's like so famous about him. He did spend time living in London. He had written an article about an artist called Dante Rossetti, and he ended up caring for the artist for the rest of Dante's life. And it was the artist who basically encouraged Caine to use his knowledge of the Isle of Man in his writing, and he could like carve a niche out for himself as like the Isle of, like the Bard of Manxland was what he would call him. So he did that. He wrote a total of 7 novels that were based here on the Isle of Man. And in 1901, he wrote the novel The Eternal City, which was the first British novel to ever sell more than 1 million copies.
Wow. That's a lot of books.
Mm-hmm.
Do you reckon Julia or the other one that was deemed indecent sold that many?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
I bet Constable Killip was on the page.
But it just always makes me think about literacy levels in them times as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, yeah.
To sell that many books.
That's really staggering, really.
Yeah. Alfred Hitchcock directed a version of his novel The Manxman, which, as Sam told me before, was the last silent film that Alfred Hitchcock made.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, Hitchcock didn't like Caine at all. They did not get along. And so much, in fact, that Hitchcock insisted that filming of the film The Manxman take place in Cornwall, just so he avoided running into Caine.
Was he living here at that point?
Yes, he eventually moved to the island. He went to Peel. Don't know whereabouts in Peel, but he eventually would end up living in Greba Castle. So, and I think the family still own it,
right.
The property. But because he was such a famous man for the time, it was not uncommon to see like crowds of people gathered outside trying to like catch a glimpse of him.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
It should be like
paparazzi.
Yeah.
What's like the equivalent today?
Well, you've got to think, if he's selling this many books, he's got to be like at your level of like J.K. Rowling.
Yeah, that's a good... Yeah.
Fair play.
Yeah. He was good friends with T. E. Brown, and he dedicated a collection of essays entitled The Little Manx Nation to him, and that eventually became a book published by the Steam Packet as, like, an incentive of, like, visit Isle of Man.
Mm.
He embarked on a political career as well. In 1901, he was tied with all of the elitism involved in Manx politics, as many people tended to be at that time. And he stood for election, and he would go on to represent Ramsay in the House of Keys. Apparently, he wore knickerbockers to the House of Keys, which caused quite the uproar. I had to Google what they looked like.
You know what you're wearing next time you're covering the House of Keys?
I've got enough issues about holding what wearing a tie, to be honest.
Yeah, his career in Manx politics was actually quite short-lived because he was very absent from a lot of the things happening at the House of Keys, so he did step down in 1908. He did stay quite political, though. He offered a lot of support to Belgian refugees during World War I, so much that the King Albert of Belgium made him an officer of the Order of Leopold.
Wow.
Which is quite the honour. He also worked on British propaganda for the government and worked with David Lloyd George, the Prime Minister. He actually was approached by the Prime Minister to write a script for basically a propaganda film called Victory and Peace, which he did, but the film never got made because of the victory and peace that had happened. he also helped draft documents which were the foundation of the League of Nations.
Wow.
Yeah. And he wrote a book in 1923 that focused on the racial hatred that accompanied the internees that were held on the island.
Mm-hmm.
So that's called The Woman of Nakhala.
Mm.
He died in 1931, and his gravestone was designed by Archibald Knox, and he's buried in Mackled.
Wowzers.
So I've got some random facts. These were just the ones I really love that I found.
Another fascinating character. Yeah, go on.
Because there's so much information about him, but these things really stood out. He looked like what we imagine when we think of William Shakespeare. Like, imagine the little beard and the hair. And he did it on purpose. And apparently, if people didn't say that he looked like Shakespeare, he would bring it up.
People say I look like Shakespeare, you know.
He was friends with a key suspect in the Jack the Ripper case.
Wow.
A guy called Francis Tumblety.
Ooh.
He met his wife Mary when she was only 13 and he was 29.
No comment.
Yeah. Bram Stoker dedicated Dracula to him.
Yeah.
And King... Right, this is... You're going to see how bad my Roman numerals are. King Edward VII. So that's the 8th?
That's the 7th.
7th, okay. Who was the son of Queen Victoria and the father of George... But I thought he was the father of the one with the speech problem from the King's speech. But he wasn't. He's his grandfather. Anyway, King Edward VII visited the island and he was a massive fan of Hall Caine's writing. And so Caine accompanied the royal couple for their tour of the island. He has memorial gardens named after himself in Strathallan Crescent because he was like kind of his own hype man. He planned his own like monuments in Mackled and he planned his own like... places to be dedicated to him around the island.
I like him.
I like it.
It's like Henry Blum Noble, but without the effort of spending money.
there's a lot of information on Culture Bannon that you can find about him, and there's links to other things, and he's a very interesting man.
He sort of reminds me, in a very sort of slight way, of Forrest Gump.
Just like, this extraordinary
man that leads many lives within one, almost.
Because everything else is just... random things like making a film with Alfred Hitchcock but falling out.
Yeah.
Looking sadly, like Shakespeare.
It, because he wanted to. Yeah. It is amazing. Yeah, yeah, so that was Hall Caine.
There's an airport somewhere. I think it's now not an airport, obviously, but there was Hall Caine Airport, which is in the north somewhere.
There is. I did read that and I can't remember whereabouts it is.
Because it's now sort of like an airfield, which is kind of, I think it's used for gliding or something now.
Right.
But there is still a place called Hall Caine Airport, as it were.
Yeah.
But he is a fascinating character. Thank you, as always, Katie. That was very interesting. If people have got their own memories of Hall Caine you want to share, please do on our social media at IMM News Podcast on Instagram and Twitter.
Actually do remember Culture Bannon put something up a few weeks ago, I think, which was about the filming of a version of The Manx Man over here, which... and people who worked as extras on the film from years ago, because there's a few versions been made of it, I think.
It's kind of weird how his books have sort of just vanished, though, isn't it? You know, they're not the massive sort of things that they were.
Maybe they're horrendously racist.
Well, apparently he wrote about a lot of things like infidelity and like quite like shocking things for back
maybe
in the day.
Maybe Constable Killock make sure all the copies weren't allowed to be out.
That this could be it. We could have stumbled across something here, Sam. Right, that's about it for this week. What's coming up, Sam?
Oh, there's loads. Actually, I'm most looking forward to in the Examiner is your coverage from FCR Man's game against Guernsey.
Yes, Disco Dave Norton has been dispatched to Glen Country Road on Saturday morning to interview Tony Vance, who is the manager of Guernsey FC, because, of course, they have been playing football in the English non-league for 9 years now, the path that FC Alaman are hopefully going to follow down in October. So, yeah, they will have some coverage of that, and there'll be all sorts of post-match reaction and such like, and I may even do a review of all the confectionery that was available at the ground on the night. Anything else, Sam?
There's loads of stuff, really, isn't there? Yeah, there's just loads.
Some really good, obviously this weekend, the 15th, is VJ Day.
Mm-hmm.
We're marking the anniversary of that. There's events all over the island.
Yeah, it's rare of this really, because we're sort of, you know, it's local newspapers would be full of this stuff normally, but of course there's only here we can do it in such a way, because it isn't being celebrated the same way VE Day is. It never is, really. But yeah, we've got VJ Day here, we've got the there's memorials being held, there's Peel, and so the Cathedral and St George's Church in Douglas are going to be ringing the bells. Now they're going to have the full bell ringing stuff going off, and they think it's the only place in the British Isles that will have the full
bells
experience. Yeah, because you got obviously social distance in other places, but here, of course, they can do it. So you got that. There's Castle Town, that's worth getting down to.
At the station, yeah.
The train station's going back to 1940s.
Oh, wow.
There's loads on.
Ramsey are doing a wreath laying and have a street party on
Sunday. Onken, there's a church service, which isn't really a church service. It's going to be more of a memorial service and a talk about what Onken was like during the war, and Manxman, who fought on the Burma War, so you've got the Burma Star
campaign,
the Burma campaign, which is largely forgotten by history in terms of coverage of the war. So there's that. There's loads on this weekend, and all that'll be in the paper. And yeah, it is actually a very packed Examiner already. So.
Yes, and if, that's without mentioning the Santon. Was it the Santon show? St Mark's Fair, which is this weekend as well. I know it was a date in your diary, Katie.
Love it.
Much about the world distribution we should be aware of. I'm guessing by that look of...
Well, picture your pet.
Picture your pet, of course.
You can get voting for that now.
Right, that's in the Independent next Thursday, isn't it? You can see all the contenders, 85 of them.
It's either next week's or it was this week's.
No, it's next week's.
It's next week's, definitely.
80, the biggest ever entry, I was told by...
We had so many entries, and I wouldn't know who to vote for because they're all adorable.
So that's the Pitch Your Pet is in the Independent next.
Yeah. Was producer Emma's cat Cersei excluded from the list?
Yeah, she's just featured on some
promotional.
Some promo, because she's a very cute cat. But unfortunately,
I know that Emma would rig it.
Yeah, she would. We would all be buying extra newspapers.
So that's in next week's Independence. Please do keep an eye out on that. Well, and on that bombshell, until next week.
Bye for now.